think I told you last week, last Sunday's gospel lesson, the woman at the well, was really the germ that got me interested in studying Scripture. My home congregation had a theologian in residence program, and so a New Testament professor came in one weekend and spent the whole weekend talking about the woman at the well story and going through all the contradictions and the nuances and the details of the cultural and racial and linguistic issues in the text. So I was enthralled. But this text may well be why I ended up going to seminary and becoming a pastor, or more specifically, a preacher, somebody who professionally speaks about Jesus. Because I love the way the healed man deals with his opponents and tells his story. At first, when he's asked, it's the shortest evangelism speech ever. He put mud on my eyes, I washed, I see. That's it, 3 points. But Jesus' opponents, of course, wouldn't let it go, so they kept after him. They ask him again about it, and then they call on his parents. And his parents are interestingly evasive. They don't seem to know anything about this. And not wanting to get involved, by the way, there's a little anachronism here. It says, as a sort of editorial aside, that people who follow Jesus, proclaim Jesus as Messiah, were thrown out of the synagogue. That probably didn't happen until decades after this story. But certainly the opponents of the Jewish authorities, that is, those who followed Jesus, got themselves in trouble. In any event, the parents not only don't defend their son, they throw him in the bus. Ask him. He's old enough. He can speak for himself. So then the fun part for me starts. They call in the man. And I'm intrigued by his techniques, the way he addresses his opponents. The authorities call him in and start grilling him. He's already told him the story, so now he goes full bore sarcastic. You guys are really interested in him, huh? Do you want to be his disciples? And then he mocks them. Sarcasm and mockery have always been my strong suits, and so that's why I found myself attracted to this story and the study of Scripture. Turns out, sarcasm is not in great demand in churches. Who knew? Well, I did have a confirmation student years ago. Military family. Father from the Philippines, mother from Germany. She'd grown up all over the world. And in confirmation class, she said, I don't understand sarcasm. And I said, well, I could explain it to you like you'd understand. It was about 4 years later, when she was valedictorian of her class, that she understood sarcasm very well and regularly still uses it on me. But I'm getting ahead of myself and the story. And since it's a long one, I'm only going to hit a couple of points, and then I am going to let Jesus give you insight into the others. Use your understanding and insight that God gifts to us to explore the other parts of this story we're not covering. Let the sight that Jesus gives us all get to work. If there's anything worth noting in this story, aside from the flashy part of healing, it is that the healed man is perhaps the best evangelism expert in the New Testament. And he is us in the story. Jesus has just told his disciples, when they asked this question, about who sinned. He's just told them that what we ought to be doing is the work that is before us in the day before night comes and we can't do the work. Our work is to do what this man does. Tell the story of how God works in the world. So let me back up to the beginning of the story where the disciples are asking, essentially, why do bad things happen to people? And Jesus says, seriously? You're going there? You're asking about karma in the midst of all this? Karma is not a thing, he says. This isn't about somebody sinning or not sinning. This is about God's work in the world. Stop trying to make sense of everything, good or bad, that happens. Sometimes stuff just happens. So stop trying to find a system that explains everything. Now, interestingly, in Luke's gospel, the town of Siloam, Pool of Siloam, in Luke's gospel, the town of Siloam has an accident. A tower falls over and kills 18 people, and people are asking, why did that happen? And Jesus says, nope, you can't explain it because those 18 people were worse sinners than others. Stuff happens. So, cut it out trying to explain things or understand things that way. Now, this is just me, by the way, but Jesus clearly is not a proponent of karma. Things do happen. Stop worrying about do nice people get blessed and evil people get cursed. It is seriously dangerous to play the game of drawing conclusions about karma or superstition, about why things happen, that God must have some plan when bad things happen that we can't quite understand, or a reasonable rationale for why one person suffers something bad and somebody else seems to go through life gliding along. If you do that, try to understand and explain some rationale. The only answers you'll come up with are at least inadequate and probably flat out wrong and misleading. I'll speak for myself. When I come up to an intersection and somebody's there with a cardboard sign walking back and forth in the median, there is something that goes on in me that tries to explain about why they are in that situation. And usually, if they only had the ambition to get a job, or if we only had a social safety net that would provide for, that God would never allow this to happen, I find some way of rationalizing it. That's just part of who I am, that just wishes things weren't that way and there ought to be a way. But there wouldn't be. I imagine that it's somebody's fault. Stuff just happens. That's really self-serving. It allows me to think about those things instead of my own response, a reason not to help or even care. And even worse, there is a part of me that often says, there, but for the grace of God, go I. As if God blesses me, I'm warm and comfortable, but God does not bless that person. Time to check my theology. To assume that someone is not blessed by God and that I am blessed by God, as if God picks winners and losers. No, but we do. Classic Christian Orthodox theology has an explanation for why there are bad things in the world. The Latin term for it is incurvatus se, that we are curved in on ourselves. And so what we understand to be blessings and curses are frequently just the working out of our human selfishness. Perhaps I'm blessed because I've gotten better at being selfish, and others seem to be cursed because I don't share. Second high point. Jesus is pretty clear about a major piece of being a disciple is doing the work of the one who sent me while it is day, when before night comes and nothing, we can't do any work. And that work is to proclaim what God is all about. To tell the world how God works, who God is, what God looks like, if you will. To point out that if you want to see how God works in the world, watch how Jesus acts in the world. If you want to know what God looks like, look at Jesus. God is about loving and serving. As we'll see in a couple of weeks on Monday, Thursday. You want to understand God? Watch the one who washes feet. Love one another. In the same way that I have loved you, washing feet. I didn't go to seminary to learn to wash feet. That seemed like not a very good career path. Taking the form of a servant and washing feet, unlikely to lead to a big portfolio and a nice retirement. I don't know about you. Washing feet doesn't seem like a good career path. Not much future in it, it seems to me. Look how it worked out for Jesus. Not a very good future. But then again, if you read, and we will, if you read to the end of this story, the career path of a servant who washes feet is the only career path that has a guaranteed permanent future. You want to understand God? You want to experience love in that quintessential and forever sense? Try servanthood. It is the only career that literally does not end. For the love of God. Forever and ever.